More Idaho Matters right now on Boise State Public Radio News. New York Times bestselling author J. Ryan Straddle is back with his third novel, Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. His first book, Kitchens of the Great Midwest, won the American Booksellers Association Indies Choice Award for Adult Debut Book of the Year. And we are lucky enough to have Jay joining us now on the program. Jay, it's really nice to have you with us.
Oh, I'm lucky enough to be here. Thanks for having me.
So first off, give us a brief synopsis of this new book for people who may not be familiar.
It's a multi-generational Midwest family epic centered around a restaurant that gets passed through four generations.
Okay. Now, you say that I've read that you have said this book was kind of inspired by this Midwestern tradition of supper clubs.
Right.
A lot of people may not know what that is. So tell us a little bit more.
Can I have my character Mariel describe it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the first character you meet, Mariel. She's the third generation, very eagerly inherited the supper club. And this is how she describes it. Every summer weekend, the Lakeside Supper Club's horseshoe-shaped bar and its wood-paneled lounge were packed with people fresh from fishing boats and softball games and cars that had driven up from the cities. It was a place where people chose to be on the most memorable nights of their lives, and it was a pleasure to be at the center of it all. On Mariel's watch, a proper supper club meal began with a free relish tray and basket of bread, with a round of brandy old fashions, and then a lavish amount of hearty cuisine with fish on Fridays, prime rib on Saturdays, and grasshoppers for dessert. Does that sound good to you?
I love this so much. So I spent a couple of years in the Midwest, in the television news business. I lived in Lincoln, Nebraska. And when you say that Friday night fish fry, I mean, that's exactly what summer times in the Midwest are about. And I know that you grew up in Minnesota. So, you know, is part of this, you know, kind of an homage to your own upbringing in a sense?
Absolutely. And also wanting to see more of it in fiction. Mm. As a young reader growing up, I did not see a lot of representations of Minnesota or the types of Minnesotans I knew in fiction. I was really hungry for it. So even though there's quite a few more Midwest writers now and a great number of excellent Midwest books, I still feel I want to add to that conversation. I'm writing for that teenage kid who would have jumped at the chance to read this book or a book like this.
You know, too, it's funny. So I have a very good friend who's from Red Wing, Minnesota. And and I always, you know, I give her a hard time about certain phrases because, you know, I think of Minnesotans and they say, oh, for fun. Oh,
yeah.
Right. And I think it's a part of America that I think, you know, when we say you fly over, I mean, in a way you do. If you don't spend time in the Midwest, I think you're missing out in a way. And
that
might sound silly to some people, but I mean, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's also a hard place to get to know if you're not from there. I've heard people say that if you weren't born and raised there, it would be almost impossible to set a novel there. You would just miss really key details that are a part of life that are very subtle. It's a subtler place than I think a lot of the parts of the country that are more often written about, which probably is one reason why there's not a Midwest fiction shelf in every independent bookstore. But I think it's really rewarding. I mean, I think we're tough nuts to crack, but it's rewarding when you do.
Yeah, no kidding, right? So my understanding is you, like a lot of authors whose books are being published right now, wrote most of this book during the pandemic. So what was that process like for you? Here you are writing, you know, in lockdown, yet at the and you're writing about restaurants, right? Well, that was the one place we couldn't go.
Right. It's like writing about driving a car the day after you get your license suspended.
Right.
I felt like I had to for a number of reasons. And the pandemic wasn't the only challenge in my life at the time. Our first son, Auden, was born in December 2019.
Oh, my goodness.
So while my partner's at work, I'm rocking this infant with my left foot while I'm typing.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was a tremendous evolution in my life. And in the meantime, I'm, as you point out, I'm writing about restaurants being unable to go to any. Not only because there aren't any supper clubs where I'm living right now in California. I moved out here for work long ago and stuck around because I met other Midwesterners here. But I had to do my research almost entirely via phone or email. And also, this was not a time where you're catching restaurant owners at their best.
Right.
Yeah, it was a tough time to be talking to them. But luckily, they took time out of their schedules when they're anxiously pivoting to try to figure out how to make money doing takeout and delivery and just generally stay alive when it's already not easy. Mm-hmm. I interviewed one supper club owner whose supper club had just closed unexpectedly because of the pandemic, entirely because of that. So, yeah, it was difficult on a number of levels. But as much as I missed going to supper clubs and going to restaurants, I did get to go to this one in my imagination every day. I feel like I write out of a utopian impulse. I want to write a book that I would live in.
I love that.
I want to show people at their best, and I want to write scenarios that, well, you know, for me was an escape. It was the book I needed during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I missed restaurants so much as a enthusiastic end user of food. I had to write about them just to comfort myself. And so, there's nothing more comforting than comfort food either, as as it happens. And supper clubs, to me, are the pinnacle of comfort food delivery in the Midwest.
So here's a question for you. Then, you know, you talk about how here you are catching these restaurateurs, you know, at their absolute worst, right? Not having to just pivot, but we know so many restaurants closed and all of that. I mean, part of your book, though, is that there's not just the main character. There's another character whose family is kind of known for these, you know, I don't want to say chain restaurants, but these bigger kind of corporate restaurants coming in and then closing down these mom and pops. I know that's not the same as what we experienced in the pandemic, but I'm curious as to how you were able to kind of take some of that stress and that anxiety that these actual real life restaurant owners were experiencing and write that into the book.
Right. Yeah. I saw that happen in my own town. I grew up in a town that had about 12,000 people when we moved to it in 1980. And when the Applebee's came in the 90s, a lot of people said, "We're a real town now. We're on the map." And that was a depressing thing to hear, because it was plain to see in the coming years how many locally owned and operated restaurants closed in the wake of that. I understand the value of having a successful chain. It did sell similar food at lower price points, and that's not nothing. You know, a big obstacle to me eating out as a child was my parents couldn't afford it. Going to restaurants was a pretty special occasion. And so, yeah, if you can take a family out for a few bucks less, that's worth something. But at the same time, so is supporting a local business that is owned by someone you can see at church, or someone you can see at the store, and someone you can have a relationship with, and not just a transactional exchange with as a customer, but a real friendship. And I think that's the kind of thing that supper clubs in particular engender, because they tend to be in more rural or isolated locations. They tend to be a little hard to get to. And once you're there, you're there. There's no one waving the bill under your nose after an hour saying, let's go. We got to have turnover.
Exactly. Come on, move on. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's a third space in the best possible way. And historically, supper clubs have had entertainment, live music, dancing. They're often used for special events, wedding receptions to this day. And that's such a valuable thing to have in a community. Not only the locally owned place, but the locally owned place that has the agility to service the community in different ways. And I don't think Applebee's can do that.
No offense to Applebee's, but
yeah, no offense to Applebee's. Well, yeah.
Well, you know, the thing that surprised me too about the book is when you said it, because you know, I picked it up thinking, oh, this will be, you know, present time, right? And it's in 1996. Right. I mean, I mean, for some of us, that doesn't seem that long ago until you do the math.
Right.
But you really write, you know, I don't know if legacy is the right word or not, but kind of this generational, as you said, you know, Muriel's the third generation of this supper club. And so, and I think there's a lot to that in the sense of like what we want to pass down to our children.
Exactly.
You know, here you said you had a newborn baby as you were writing this. What, before he was born, was this kind of part of how you were envisioning the story, or was it becoming a parent that kind of, you know, made that come into more focus?
That's an extremely insightful question because it's absolutely true. When I was a childless adult, I looked around me and I thought, well, someday someone's going to have to burn all this stuff in a bonfire in the backyard when I die. And now I've got someone who might pick two or three things out before they burn it in a pile. Yeah, so I hadn't thought of legacy before. I hadn't thought about what I'm leaving behind or the effect I'm having on the next generation in the same way. And now it's a very real thing. And I also fully expect him to reject as much as he cares to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't expect him to too enthusiastically mime the life of a writer.
Yeah,
I'm not necessarily going to encourage it. If he chooses it, that's fine. I'll help him, but I want him to shine in the way he chooses. And I thought about what it's like to bring a child into the world and think about the hopes and dreams and expectations you have for them. A lot while writing this book, and a lot about how, you know, each generation moves what they inherit forward in whatever way they see fit. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, they get the last word. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that as I paced the book across generations. Like, Muriel's chapters take place in the 1990s, just because that's the way the generation fell. I started the book in the 30s, right after the Depression, when a lot of what became supper clubs were emerging,
right,
in America. So there was a historical reason to start where I did. But because I started there, okay, well, pacing the story forward in the way I had to, kind of made each generation break at certain points in time. All the way up until, yeah, just before the present day, where Julia, the fourth generation, comes in. So, yeah, boy, legacy. Yeah, it ended up becoming a huge theme in this book. I'd say that's the primary theme at the end of the day. And going into it, oh, man, like I said, my son was born in December 2019. I started writing this book in May 2019. And the chapters I wrote between May and December were all the Muriel chapters, which is basically the story of a woman who sets out to pick up her mom from church, doesn't make it because she hits a deer and other complications ensue. And her mom, Florence, decides to wait at that church anyway for her daughter to pick her up for 3 months.
And oh my gosh.
For anyone who finds that unbelievable hasn't met a Midwestern grandmother. It's perfectly
feasible. Well, I have
to
say,
yeah,
it is such a great read. And I love books like this that just give you, you know, that they're inspiring, but they're a great read. And it really does take me back a bit to my time in the Midwest. And I really appreciate that. So thank you for taking time today and talking with us.
Absolutely. Anytime. I hope you enjoy the book and visit the Midwest whenever you can, especially in the summer.
Yes. Yes, in the summer. Don't go in the wintertime. You might get stuck. Yeah. We've been talking with New York Times bestselling author J. Ryan Straddle about his new book, Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. It is out now. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Two men of color vanished after last being seen in the same deputy's patrol car.
I knew something was wrong. The mother knows.
It's the strangest case, the most unsettling case.
Listen to The Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR Network.